morning, everyone. Happy Sabbath. Okay, so you'll have to bear with me because the last time I preached, I was like 10 and there was like 15 members and I talked about horses. So I've upped it a bit today. But yeah, I'm going to be talking more about my personal experience, and Amish is going to kind of tie in the biblical aspect of treasured. So yeah. Okay. When I was younger, I had a super simple relationship with God, a childlike faith. I had grown up attending many different churches, and our Sabbath was dependent on what preaching appointments we had been asked to fulfill. I knew all the Bible stories, knew all about who God was, and I had a real in-depth understanding of Adventist theology, the benefits of being a PK. However, in year 7, it got serious. I started to question more, doubt more. As I changed into a teenager, my beliefs started to form a more serious contention within my life. They were malleable and easily shaped by opinions and life experiences. It was the church that became my image of God, a weekly exposure to what God's character was like based on the interactions with the people attending. Unfortunately, as many good experiences I've had at church, there have also been some pretty horrible ones. I reflect on some awful business meetings that have resulted in young bitterness for a church that made mum cry, or a church that left dad struggling with mental health. An anger towards a God whose people reprimanded me for the length of my dress or the volume I was speaking during the sermon. It was only small moments of resentment, small instances of anger or disdain. But when you can't express doubts or concerns because of the responsibility of being a pastor's kid, bitterness starts to eat away at you. For some reason, myself and so many other pastor's kids I know have been put on a pedestal within church, making it socially unacceptable for us to be anything less than perfect saints. We're expected to be firm within our faith, not having doubts or questions, as well as the perfect model example of how to behave within the sanctuary. We're completely overlooked as children, and I think that pressure does have its consequences. Pastor's kids are exposed to the best and worst of the church and the best and worst of God's people. The church is a reflection of who God is for children, because they don't have a real understanding of his character except through how the congregation treats them. When I was in grade 8, I started to feel like being at church was an act I had to perfect, something that was a version of me that I knew people wanted to see and not my authentic self. As I started to experience the weight of these expectations, I started to lose my childlike faith. Church felt like more of a performance, and God felt more like a fairy tale. However, I felt a lot of guilt about this, like I was doing the wrong thing having these feelings, like I was supposed to be genuine, but I was so scared of being judged. I didn't want my actions to reflect negatively on Dad's ministry. I started to feel a bit like a fraud, like a fake Christian. So I used my involvement in church to make me feel better. You can't be a bad Christian if you are singing every week and constantly helping out with church activities. My guilt-free card was making myself super busy. I'd reasoned with myself that I believed in God and I was going to church. Therefore, I was fulfilling my Christianly duties. I didn't really enjoy going to church as such, and I didn't really have a personal relationship with God. But I couldn't express this, so I hid it away and continued my perfect act. In year 9, the pressures of being a teenager, combined with a mental health episode, pushed me further into my Christian despair. I would put on a mask, and then I would take it off as soon as we had left. I'd fulfill my duty, but hate every moment I was there, feeling rejected and unaccepted by people who cared more about making sure I was their model image than they cared about me. I often worried if the congregation could see the real me, they would fire my dad. I began to grow in my resentment for a God whose people are horrible, who care more about the issues of drums than us kids inside the church. Year 10 was the hardest of my life. I started voicing to my parents my hatred for church. I went down a super bad path mentally and personality-wise. I dreaded Friday, as I knew the next day I would have to go to church. I disliked feeling inadequate, and the small comments people made every now and then would eat away at me. I transformed my genuine feelings and anger for the treatment I had received into a sort of justification to turn my back on Adventism completely. Thank you. I even decided that I didn't want to be a Christian anymore. It was a super dark place, and the complete rejection of God showed in my actions and my speech. The cool thing is, even though I'd given up on God, he had never given up on me. He completely transformed my life slowly, removing people that were pushing me down the wrong path and bringing me into a community where I could begin the process of healing. The horrible experiences I had with church members taught me that you cannot look to people for an image of God, as well as provided me with an example of what not to be like, and fueling my desire to be a different influence in my interactions with people. If I learned anything in my 17 years of church attendance, it's this. Going to church doesn't make you a good Christian. It doesn't save you. It isn't a weekly list you can check off to remove the guilt you have. If you're always involved in church and giving all your energy into music or sound or helping with lunch, that doesn't make you a good Christian or bring you to salvation. Service to God doesn't equal a relationship with God. It is a personal and intentional friendship with God, as well as an acceptance of Jesus, that is the only way to heaven. Then through that, you will have a desire to be involved in his ministry, whatever way you can, but you cannot have one without the other. So how does this fit into the theme treasured, you may ask? Great question. While God never gave up on me, he sought me out as he did the Israelites, which is what Amish is going to talk about, and like he does to everyone in this building. He genuinely cares about having an intimate relationship and being actively involved in your life. He doesn't do anything in halves, and showing up for church once a week is not what he is looking for. Because he loves you so much, he wants you to reflect that love to others. You would be surprised what children remember about interactions with you, and surprised how much they can pick up when your actions and words aren't in alignment. We need to make sure we are intentional with making this church one that feels where people feel genuinely seen, loved, and treasured within. A church that accurately reflects who God is. My experiences have mirrored so many other kids my age, and the more I hear that I'm not an outlier, the more discouraged I become. The church is so powerful and can make or break a person's decision to seek God. It definitely broke mine, and if I didn't have an amazing support system, who knows where I'd be at this moment. But I know it would not be anywhere near church this Sabbath. So I invite you all to reflect on yourselves right now. Take a moment to reflect on your own lives. Think about your role within church and your motivation for enacting them. Make sure it comes from a passion for Jesus and not to remove any guilt or be used even in place of a relationship with God. Also take a second to think about your interactions with people this week. Did you actually accurately depict Jesus' love to the people you talk to inside and outside of church? I also ask you to pray. Pray for our church and its ministry. Pray that everyone who walks in this door will feel the love and grace of God, no matter what, as well as for that love to reach the community in daily interactions. 1 John 4:8, whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love.
Good morning, church. How are you? So, good morning. How's everyone feeling today? Good? So, thank you, Grace, for that message. Made me tear up a little bit in the back, but yeah, we'll get into it. So, I want to start with our theme is treasured by God, as you can see, and you can see throughout our sermon and through Grace's message, but I want to start with defining what treasure means. So, formally, treasure, So formally, treasure is a quantity of precious metals or gems or other valuable objects. So in a sentence, the ransom was to be paid in diamonds and treasure. But informally, treasure is defined as a highly valued person in the sense that the housekeeper is a real treasure. I don't know what he would do without her. That's probably really obvious, right? Like, oh, Amish, why are you defining that? But the point is, what we treasure, it's personal. It's different for everyone. What you call treasure might seem ordinary to someone else. But here's where it gets really interesting. God also has a definition of treasure. And his treasure is us. In Exodus 19:5, God tells his people, although the whole earth is mine, you will be a treasured possession. So just let that sink in. The God who created the galaxies, the oceans, the mountains, the one who owns everything, says you are his treasure. But here's the twist. We don't always act like treasured people. We run, we forget, we mess up, and yet God doesn't walk away. He runs after us. But even when we run from God, he runs after us. Not out of anger, but out of love, because we are his treasured possession. In the Bible, God likes to give us examples that we can relate in our own lives. We can easily see this through the Israelites. Time and time again, We see them stuff up and make mistakes, but God is still running after them. If you guys want to go to, there we go, Exodus 32, 3 to 8. So it's about the golden calf. So if you want to quickly open that up, I also have it up there. It might be a little bit small, but. So all the people took off their earrings and brought them to Aaron. He took what they had, what they handed him, and made it into an idol, cast into the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. Then they said, "These are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt." When Aaron saw this, he built an altar in front of the calf and announced, "Tomorrow there will be a festival to the Lord." So the next day, the people rose early, sacrificed burnt offerings, and presented fellowship offerings. Afterward, they sat down to eat and drink and got up to indulge. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Go down, because your people, whom you brought up out of Egypt, has become corrupt. They have been quick to turn away from what I have commanded them and have made themselves an idol cast into the shape of a calf. They have bowed down to it and sacrificed to it and have said, 'These are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt.'" This is really interesting because in this verse, you can see that they ran in a spiritual sense, turning away from the true God and chasing a false one. If you didn't get to the other verse, don't worry, we're going through another one. So if we can turn to Numbers chapter 14, and this is another time where the Israelites disobeyed God and ran away from him. That night, all the members of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in the wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land to let us fall by the sword?" So this is in the context of when they were in the promised land, or when they were looking at the promised land, they're like, "Oh, it's kind of scary. I don't know if we can go there. So our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." Then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. "If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into the land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will devour them. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them." In this passage, the Israelites ran by rejecting God's promise and leadership, choosing to follow their own path rather than God's. Additionally, the book of Judges describes a repeating cycle in history. Number one, Israel sins by turning away from God or running from him. Number two, God allows consequences or oppression to come upon them. Israel cries out to God in repentance. God raises a judge to rescue and restore them. And then it happens again. This highlights how the Israelites repeatedly ran from God through disobedience. But after each time the Israelites ran away, God treated them as his own children. In the golden calf incident, God was angered but relented after Moses' intercession and renewed the covenant with them. And when the Israelites rebelled against Moses, God punished the generation with 40 years wandering, but continued to provide and lead them. And in Judges, each time the Israelites cried out in repentance, God raised a judge to rescue them. Throughout Israel's history, their disobedience and rebellion were met with consequences. But God's mercy and forgiveness were always available when they turned back to him. This reflects the heart of a God who treasures his people deeply and relentlessly pursues them in love, even when they run away. Even when the Israelites ran away, turning their backs on God, chasing after idols or doubting his promises, God did not give up on them. Instead, he ran after them, not with anger or condemnation, but with relentless love and a desire to restore. And even when we run away from God through mistakes, bad choices, or just drifting away, he doesn't walk away from us. He pursues us. In Luke 15, verses 4 to 7, Jesus tells a story about a shepherd with 100 sheep. One wanders off, but instead of cutting his losses and sticking with the 99, the shepherd goes after the one, searching until he finds it. And when he does, he lifts it onto his shoulders with joy and calls his friends to celebrate. That's the kind of love God has for us. This parable isn't just a nice story, it's a window into God's heart. He doesn't chase us with anger, he chases us with love. Even when we think we've wandered too far, God is already reaching out. Not to lecture us, but to lift us back up and bring us home. God disciplines, yes, but never to destroy, only to restore. His goal is always healing, always wholeness. And I got a glimpse of that kind of love, God's persistent, gentle pursuit during a moment that seemed small at the time, but really stuck with me. I don't know if I told my mom or dad this, but yeah, we'll see how this goes. So this happened to me one morning during Festival of Faith. So I'd hopped on the train early and tried to go to school early because, I was playing bass. So I'm like, you know, got to be there early for practice, make sure I'm on time so we can get through the songs and stuff. And I didn't want to take an Uber from the train station, you know, because I had no money. But I also wanted to save the environment. So, you know, I didn't want to take an Uber, so I walked. But before I left, I put my mic in my wallet and then put it in my side pocket of my Year 12 jacket. And I always put stuff there. And nothing has fallen out before, so I'm like, you know, she'll be right. If I drop it, yeah, it doesn't matter. I didn't really think I'd drop it, but anyways. But when I got to school and reached for it, spoiler alert, it was gone. I didn't know where it went. And I felt that pit in my stomach. You know the feeling? Like my wallet has my ID, my bank card, and a few other important things. I checked my bag, every pocket in my jacket, even though there was only two, and even places it couldn't possibly be, like under the piano. So I did the only thing I could think of. I retraced my steps, jogging down the road I had just walked up. The whole time I was praying, God, please, please help me find it. I really need it. But I couldn't find it anywhere. I walked up and down the same path, looked in the grass, looked in the driveways, looked into all the ditches and stuff, but couldn't find it. But I kept praying. But I came back to school and I was tired and I was stressed and I didn't know what to do. I went to class trying to stay focused, but I was still quietly talking to God. Then, right before our final rehearsal, I reached into my pocket. I had already checked earlier, and there it was, my wallet. I just stood there, stunned. I knew I'd checked that pocket twice, maybe three times, but somehow, there it was. And at that moment, it taught me something. If I could care that much about finding a lost wallet, if I would jog back through the streets for something I treasured, how much more must God care when we're the ones who are lost? God doesn't give up on us. Even when we wander and feel far from him, he's right there, searching, reaching, and waiting. Because to him, we're not replaceable, we're not forgotten, we're not just lost, but we're treasured. Are you running? Do you feel too far gone? God hasn't given up. Although the whole earth is mine, you'll be for me a treasured possession. You are still his, still loved, still worth searching for. Thank you, church.